An interview with Charles L. Vickers at his home at 4505 California Avenue, number 312, Long Beach, California, 90807. The date of the interview is July 26, 1983, and the interviewer is Ann Andrees. Suppose we start with, were you born in Long Beach, Mr. Vickers?
No, I was born in South Dakota.
When did your family come to Long Beach?
Oh, I came to Long Beach in 1919, graduated from Poly in 20.
Why did your family choose Long Beach?
Well, my grandparents lived here. They used to be in South Dakota, and they moved to California. They lived here, and they decided they wanted me to come out and finish high school with them and live with them.
Well, so your parents didn't come at that time?
No, grandparents.
I see. So it must have been quite a contrast to come from South Dakota to Long Beach with a...
Well, Long Beach in 1919, you know, wasn't very big. All the area that you're here at Anaheim and Cherry was the end of the city.
Yes.
And where Willis Street is now and was Willow and Pacific, it was actually all that area was covered with willow trees, and that's where the name of Willis Street comes from. Because all of the area out that way was a swamp with ducks and everything else in it.
What was Poly High School like?
Well, that was the only high school in Long Beach
mm-hmm.
in 1919.
After graduating from Poly, you went on to college?
Well, in those days, you had a hard time. It isn't like the kids do nowadays where they can borrow money and go to school. I'd work a while and go to school, and I'd work a while and go to school, and never did get it completed. The rest of the time, I had things I had to do at night school and so forth.
Well, where was it that you...
Well, I went to four different colleges.
Uh-huh.
I went to put 1 year in Dakota Westland in Mitchell, South Dakota. And I had a half a year at University of South Dakota, Vermillion, a half a year at USC, and a half a year at UCLA.
What were you studying?
Well, engineering at the last.
Uh-huh. Well, when you finished school, I believe you went to work for the city in
19... Well, I went to work, before I went to work for the city, I went to work up in High Sierras on a tunnel between Florence Lake and Huntington Lake with Edison Company.
Oh.
Almost went to South America. I'd signed up on a survey crew to go with Standard Oil to Venezuela, and then they substituted crews, and they didn't fill out the second crew, and then I went up there and worked for Edison Company. Then I came back and went to work for the city on the 1st of April in 25.
What was it you were doing with the city?
Worked on the survey crew. I worked on the survey crew before I went to, before there was a harbor department in the city. I worked out of the city hall and the survey crew, and they that's what they did. They did the harbor work in the area before... That was in 23 or something like that. In between I'd get about enough money in 4 or 5 months to go back to school for another semester, and then I go back to school, and that's the way it worked.
Mm-hmm.
50 cents an hour, you don't make much money.
No, you don't. Well, you were here then, maybe off and on, just about the time that oil was discovered on Signal Hill.
Well, I when I went to Poly High, we used to... This will be interesting. I was out on the cross country team, and we'd run up over Signal Hill at night from 16th and Atlantic. We'd come up over the hill around the sand pit that they had up there that's still there, and then back to Poly, and that was that's what we had to do at night to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that was before they had oil on Signal Hill. That was in 20, and they didn't get oil until quite a bit later.
Well, then you began with the city as a surveyor.
Yes, I worked on a survey crew, and I came back. I've worked continuously from the city since the 1st of April of 25 until I retired in 69.
Yes. There was no harbor department, separate harbor department at that time, was there?
Well, in 1925, yes.
There was.
If you take a look at your city charter, you'll find that the harbor department was formed and voters set up a district in the harbor that was to be run by a commission appointed by the city manager and confirmed by the city council.
Yes.
You'll find that in your city charter. And that was before 1925.
But the harbor wasn't anywhere. What was it, the harbor?
Well, the harbor, the original harbor was a private, was started in 1906 by a private concern, Long Beach Dock and Terminal
yes.
Company. And they, the only reason they gave it to the city is because they had a flood in 1914, 15, and 16 in there and filled up the harbor, filled up the entrance channel.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave the city all the channels, deeded all the beds of all the channels to the city, and they kept all the upland so that the city would dredge out the channels and then they would have all the land in the city and own the bottom of the sluices.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that part of it worked.
Well, at that time, there wasn't, we didn't have the municipal auditorium, we didn't have...
Oh, yes, you had an auditorium. We had an auditorium down there by the old Pine Avenue Pier. It was two deck.
Oh, yeah.
And you had an auditorium at the foot of Pine Avenue Pier on the east side of the pier. And old George Taubman, the minister, used to have 2,500, 3,000 people or every Sunday to listen to him talk.
His Bible class.
Yeah.
Well, then I suppose you went to the Pike, too.
Oh, sure. Everybody, well, Pike was, in the beginning, the Pike was as good as Disneyland or Knott's Berry Farm or anything until it got old and deteriorated and they didn't do anything to improve it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, I have, from what I got out of looking you up at the Long Beach Public Library, you were the chief surveyor for the Harbor Department by 1938.
That's right.
Where
see what I did is that give you a little bit so you can follow a little bit. I started working with the city in 25. I worked on the survey crew and I finally got up to where, like you say, in 38. Well, of course, in about 32 or 30. Well, anyway, in there someplace, the city ran out of money. And so then I worked part of the time for the Corps of Engineers and part of the time for the city so that the Corps didn't have a survey crew, so the Harbor Department survey crew did the work for the Corps of Engineers, and our district ran from San Diego to Morro Bay,
mm-hmm.
along with what I did for the city. So I had two jobs. Then later on, when the city ran completely out of money, I went to work for the Corps for about 2 years, from 36 to 38, I think it was. I mean, I'd have to look at all those up. But anyway, basically, but that's when I came back, and that's, I came back before they, well, just about the time they discovered oil in the Harbor Department.
Mm-hmm.
And that's then when I came back did the survey work and ran the survey crews and did all the work on the oil fields at that time.
Well, as I told you, our project is to study the impact of oil on the development of Long Beach, and the discovery of the Wilmington oil field certainly changed Long Beach.
Oh, yes, sure. Well, the first well that was that was drilled was over by the Ford Motor Company off of Ford Avenue, drilled by General Petroleum in Los Angeles Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
You know where the Basque Bridge is?
Yeah.
All right, just a little bit north and a little bit west of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the first General Petroleum's first well was.
I have a current map of the harbor that the auto club has. I don't know whether it's worth looking at when we're talking, but...
Well, it may orient you.
Yeah, I might.
So this is where the first well was drilled. You see, you got, here's Ford Avenue.
Yes.
Here, let me have your
picture. Sure, you can mark it.
It was over in this area. That's the first well that was drilled. General Petroleum. It's in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the axis of the structure went out right through like this, clear out to the... Remember where the island was at Seal Beach?
Yeah.
Well, I went out that direction.
I see.
And the field runs northwest and southeast.
Yes. Well, the cities, the lands owned by the Harbor Department, so the first city-owned well, as I understand it, was drilled in March of 1937.
No, that's about right.
Just about. I'm pretty sure that's right. Yeah. I thought
it all. You got to know what well it was?
It was that Westlake Greenland well number, eight.
Well, that wasn't the first well. That wasn't the first well that the city had an interest in. There was a well drilled. Now, let's see. Let me get this. It's all screwed up from what it used to be. And West Great Greenland is right here.
I see.
And there was a well right in this area, number 1960, drilled by Jurgens, and the city had a share of that, and that was the first well drilled in the harbor area.
Oh, I see.
I think it was called Superior 1960. And then West Great Greenland was this area right in this area, and that was city property. But the city had seven or nine lots in this area, in that well, 1 acre piece of parcel, and then they had 5 or 6 acres here.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we get into an awful lot of litigation. Right.
Oh, well, that's the reason they got into the litigation. It's simple. It's because I told you to begin with that the... people that owned this land, Long Beach Dock and Terminal Company, had deeded the city the channels and the litigation. You see, a little history for all the people that don't understand it. In 1911, the state of California deeded all the land in the city of Long Beach from the city boundary, which is this line, over here, clear over to Seal Beach.
Yes.
And they deeded the city all of the land that was tide and submerged lands between which the tide line was clear back into this area. Mm-hmm. and from there to the 3 mile limit, and they deeded all of that land to the city of Long Beach and any other land that was tide land that was in this area. And when before oil was discovered, people weren't interested in the sloughs and everything that were in here that had been filled, but when they discovered oil, and then the city had to defend the state of California's interest in all of these tide and submerged lands clear back into this area, because this didn't look anything like this. It had the San Gabriel River came down in this area and into the Turning Basin. Mm-hmm. and Seal Beach. It was your Santa Ana River,
mm-hmm.
and your Los Angeles River, in the original state, went into Playa del Rey.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason for the litigation from 38 to 39 and 40 was because of the fact that the Title Insurance and Custody Company had said that these people owned the property, and if it was tide land, they didn't own it. It belonged to the city and the state, and so Long Beach had to sue these people to clear the title,
mm-hmm.
to all of this land that was underneath the channels, and the people at the dock company deeded it to the city. But now, as soon as the result discovered, they said the deed didn't carry that.
Mm-hmm.
But it did. So the city got all the oil from underneath the channels, and it was a real complicated job.
Was that partly the Marshall case? Was that a separate case that we're talking about?
Marshall case. The Marshall, I don't think, had anything to do with it. This was the...
That was determining whether the city had the rights to the mineral rights.
Oh, the city.
Rather than the state.
Oh, well, that was later.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This is a different suit. This,
okay.
We had to get all the title of this land in here straightened around, and the Marshall suit was to see whether all of the land from the mean high tide line out to 3 mile limit and between the boundary lines of the city and Long Beach was given to the city in fee.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court of the State of California said they gave it to you to be spent for commerce, navigation, and fishery.
Yes.
See? And that was a different
suit. Okay.
This was private people that you had, the city had to settle with to find out whether there was any area in here that was belonged to the state and the city. And then the other suit was the one that came from the mean high tide line out to the 3 mile limit between the city boundaries. That's
mm-hmm.
the Marshall one.
Mm-hmm. Now, the city, the suits in this Turning Basin area and right in here, were there many companies that...
Yes, Union Pacific and Pacific Dock and Edison Company and...
Craig Shipbuilding?
Well, Craig Shipbuilding. All the people that had land in there, but you had to go and find out if there was a sloop, by the way, that ran right through Craig's dry dock area. Well,
mm-hmm.
it was navigable, so they didn't change the character of it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you see? So there's, I used to have maps by the, still got them down the harbor someplace.
So what we're so we have the litigation to determine
yes.
the title to this, but then we also get into the situation of the city giving a contract for drilling for the oil on the city on lands.
Sure.
And as I understand it from the reading I've done, when I spoke with Mr. Hossam on the phone, he suggested that I read some of the issues of the Independent and to see just to get some kind of an idea of the role of the Independent in some of the conflict that was going on at the time. And
it's real simple. I wrote a legal description for all of the property. See, the Harbor District runs up to Anaheim Street, comes down Anaheim Street on the old city boundary here, down here like this, and I on this line and out to here. That's the boundary here of the Harbor District. And then it comes down Anaheim Street to the easterly line of the flood-controlled channel. It comes down like this, and it comes out this way. And that's the limit of the Harbor District.
Mm-hmm.
And that's set up in the charter, and that's the five-man commission appointed by the city manager and confirmed by the city councilor, charged with the responsibility of operating, providing the intelligence to operate this area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one deal. And that, so when we wrote the legal descriptions of the property to drill for the parcels under the Long Beach Oil Development, we had all the land that was from the mean high tide line over here to the city boundary line, and out here, all described in parcels. And we knew a little bit about the limits of the oil field and from the work that some of the oil companies had done, so you knew that this part out here didn't have any oil, and this part up here had some oil, but not very, very good oil. I mean, not very, very, very much of it. But in the area over center of the axis in here, you had about six or seven oil zones. And the production ran from about 1,800 feet, some of it, down to 6,000 feet where you hit base rock.
The Long Beach Oil Development Company was a combination of Hancock Oil, Signal Oil, Standard, who were the three major companies, and then I think each having 28.5%, and then the rest...
There were several smaller companies.
Well,
that made up the 100%.
Mr. Hossam indicated to me that that contract that was drawn up was an excellent contract.
Oh, sure.
That it really...
You see, the thing is, you don't realize in those days, the problem was they didn't get much for their oil, but the problem is that when you produced it, you had to have a market for it. And one of the things that they guaranteed is when they They had signed the contract that they would sell the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, that was the hard part. If you had it nowadays, it would be wonderful. Get $40 a barrel instead of dollar a barrel.
Yeah. Well, then, as I read in Walter Case, then, the city was going to receive a minimum of 30% of the production until LBOD was reimbursed for the drilling, and then they would get 85.5% less the production costs.
Well, now, wait a while. I used to remember that. Now you're...
That may not be...
Well... No, I don't think that's quite right.
Okay.
You got a piece of scratch paper, and well, let me look at it a minute, and I can maybe I can tell you.
Well, you can write on the back of notes I made about you.
Okay. Well, let's see. Now they get 30%, and they see. Here's the thing: you realize the city got 30% at all time, and the oil companies took 14.45% at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and the 56.55%, or 55.55%, was the amount that you want to remember that the oil companies agreed to buy all the oil.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed to advance the money. All the money was necessary for all the tank farms, everything. The city had not one penny in it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than and then the underlying fee to the land. And so the 30% that the city got at all times, and the oil companies got to 14, this is the city, and this is the oil, and the 55.55% is what was used to reimburse the oil companies for the advancement, for the drilling and operating costs, and for the advancement of the money to buy all the pipe and everything else. We went through a war, and they had to buy all the pipe,
mm-hmm.
and that was a pretty hard thing to do in those days.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now go ahead.
Well, it was in my reading of The Independent, which had just begun.
The Independent was, now, let me tell you, The Independent was, it tickled me, because The Independent didn't have anything to do with the fact that contract was made, and they spent all their time hollering about how it was made. Well, of course, yeah. But then after it was done, Mr. Martin, who's the chairman, he owned The Independent Press Telegram. Larry Collins ran it. And Ward Johnson was another one of the owners. But anyway, Frosty came down, he turned right around then, he came down to the Harbor Department. He was chairman of the Harbor Commission for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't let anybody else be chairman, and he thought that was the best contract that there ever was in the world. He wrote it. Many times I've heard him say it, but he didn't have anything to do with it. But then that has to be done for whatever it is.
But why then was The Independent opposed to the awarding of the contract?
Well, they wanted to get in so that they'd have something to do with how the city was run.
They were
Frosty Martin, you ought to realize, Martin and Decker are the oil field operators. They have the equipment, the weighing equipment that you put on all wells to test, and they had some wonderful equipment. Very fine equipment that they can take when you're drilling the well and you can put pressure. They can weigh the amount of pressure that you get on your bit, and they weigh the amount of pipe and everything that you get down there so that you don't collapse your derricks. And you don't,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they used to pull them down until they get their weighing machines on there, and they did a good job.
Well, they also were after the city council. It appeared in all the editions I read, and they campaigned enough so that when the election was held in June of 1939, all but one councilman, were ousted.
Well, that was a solid five,
yeah.
And they needed to be ousted.
But they were supporting the Harbor Commission.
Well, I know, but the solid five, there was a little, there was a little shake down there on their part, so that part was all right. I wasn't against that.
And then, but we then, after that election, have a new city manager, too.
Who was that?
Let's see, Mr. Dorton went out. Was that? Wow.
My brother was city manager for a number of years here.
Yeah, but I think this was before your brother.
But it was at Erickson that came in, Carl Erickson?
I think Mr. Dorton went out.
Well, Dorton went out, yeah.
And,
I was trying to think who came in after him. Oh, Jim Collins?
No, well, he was, let's see. Charleville.
He was a little guy.
Well, we've got Mr. Dorton out, Mr. Charleville in, and we've got a new city council. And so on September 1, 1939, all of a sudden we've got a whole new board of harbor commissioners also.
Well, you know why they got a new board of harbor commissioners?
No.
Because they thought that, the same reason they thought that there was somebody that was quicker. That's when Lynn Husson left. When he was, of course, Lynn was, he didn't care because he was working for the oil companies, and he has been since 39.
Well, it was, one of my colleagues interviewed Bob Hoffmaster last year, and he said that, right at the beginning of September, the five harbor commissioners went into the mayor's office, and then five new ones walked out. Well, I'm probably putting it incorrectly, but it was as if there was a whole new, from the June election on, as if everything was.
Well, of course, they had a new city manager, and
yes.
Of course, this is the way the harbor commissioners are run. Long Beach has been rather fortunate. This is the only time that they change them in mass, because that's the way that when you get to be a harbor commissioner in Los Angeles, the mayor appoints you,
uh-huh.
and you give him a letter of resignation, all signed and everything, but he just dates it when he wants to get rid of you if you don't work on his campaign the way you want to work. That's
uh-huh.
what happens.
Well, then, so you've got Frosty Martin is chairman of the harbor commissioners for the next 15, 16 years.
Well, 14 or 15, something like that. I used to know, but.
And then you have a new general manager of the harbor, Mr. Amar.
Amar, yeah. He came over. He was one of Frosty's boys. He came over from Los Angeles. He'd been harbor commissioner in L.A.
And then Mr. Shoemaker as the
chief engineer. That's correct.
Mr. Hoffmaster indicated and I've just read this, I haven't listened to his tape, that these three men for the next 15 years or so really established the port, really made the port, gave it a beginning. Would you agree with that statement?
Well, there's a lot of help.
Would you say that Mr. Martin was a good
Mr. Frosty was terrific. I used to love to work with Frosty because we had people when this land was decided there was oil here, we had people from Washington and everybody else came out here to try to take the land away from the city.
Mm-hmm.
And because it had never been surveyed, this is just wild land that never. And in description, other than the last section line that ran through the area was up here, about someplace up in this area, and then this was just tidal land that wasn't worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, now you got it worth a lot of oil money. And so we had people come out from all over the country, all kinds of government people, to try to get it away from the city. And that's a story in itself. And Frosty, you'd always have, we'd have meetings with those people, and it's like one guy said that he was going to sue and take it away from him. And Frosty said, well, sue. And he and I got up and left, because I'd furnish him all the information he needed from the engineering end of it, and Frosty we'd go in there and had him on the head, and away we'd go.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a wonderful person. He was one of the best things that ever happened to the city, and Shoemaker was a good engineer. I think, and a lot better than Mr. Amar was a manager.
Mm-hmm.
I was assistant manager to Amar, and later when he retired,
mm-hmm.
when I finally got to be manager. But I would say that Frosty was exceptional, and Shoemaker was a real smart person.
Part of all of this that I read in the Independent, this whole conflict with the city council and all, was based on the role of Swaffield as independent.
Swaffield and Swaffield were the attorneys that were hired to represent the city in all this litigation. Not from this part out here as much as all this area up here,
mm-hmm.
and. I provided all the engineering. I spent 4 months in the Huntington Library running down the title to all these pieces of property from the original surveys they made.
Mm-hmm.
And stirred up the title insurance trust company. I used to have them. We went up there to take a deposition. It was going to take 2 or 3 days, and it took us 30 days to take the deposition of this man that they had that was going to provide all the information for him. So we